Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure. Might be a geography, could be, maybe it's midnight on me. You know you love this week in Mormons, original Mormon news. If you love Lindsey Sterling, Bryce Harper, and Utah, and Jell-O salad foods, oh, you're gonna love this show.
We're here! Oh my goodness, I'm basking in glow. A general conference. This is This Week in Mormons, everyone. We're live streaming this for now, so if you are seeing this on Facebook, holla at us and let us know. I should probably stream that myself so I can see any questions that might come our way. I'm Jeff Openshaw, as you well know, and we are all very excited to talk about our feelings and insights into general conference. We didn't want to wait until Monday or Tuesday to get it to you. We thought we'd get it to you right now. So joining me this week, the wonderful twin sisters are also with us, everybody. Say hi.
Hello. We survived conference with small children
and teenagers.
Yeah, I almost didn't. My wife reminded me the same happened last conference when by near the very end and my kid going crazy. I was there was no spirit. I have to rewatch the entire thing. So I'm hoping that all of you can actually just help me learn what happened because I don't have a clue.
Yeah, that last session is always rough. There's either asleep or fighting or I'm bored.
Well, Ariane
needs too much.
Ariane needs to post on Facebook and the Instagram site this really cool trifold that she made for her kids as a conference activity this time. It is so beyond adorable, where they can like put speakers in chairs and at the podium and topics. It's very cool.
It has the maroon chairs. I upped my conference game. It did not keep my children from fighting, but my 4-year-old was highly entertained. For the first half of conference.
Okay. Well, we'll get to all those hot tips as we talk. I don't want to delay in introducing, of course, our other panelist. You know him. You love him. Leading Saints, very own Kurt. Whatever. Hey. Ronald Frankum. What's your name?
It's Harold. So if you'd call me K. Harold Frankum, I'd really appreciate that.
Your middle name is not Harold.
It is, too. Named that after Harold Frankum, my great-grandfather.
He wasn't real. That sounded made up.
Was. It's the reason I exist.
Okay, I really
your middle name was like Weatherby or something like
that. No, Harold. It's much stronger, you know.
K. Harold Frank. Now, we teased you a lot this weekend. We thought you'd get a big call to the podium, man.
Yeah. I was sitting by my phone all week, but it never rang. Imagine that. So.
Disappoint me, sir. You made other people tweet for you, and you weren't even busy in the conference center.
I mean, hey.
What's up with that?
I can't do it all, Jeff, okay? So you can, I cannot.
I can't, apparently, because it was all at the sacrifice of like the happiness of my children and the stability of my marriage. But it was a great weekend overall. I'm thrilled to be here. So this week, not much in the way of straight-up news that we're getting into like we traditionally do. We always do this on conference. We just recap stuff. We talk about it. Let us know your thoughts if you happen to be watching this. Otherwise, of course, send us an email at contactthisweekinmormons.com or directly to me. That's Jeff with a G, G-E-O-F, at thisweekinmormons.com. You can also contact Kurt. You can even contact the sisters via me, but you can do
it. We do
like
have
all things
an
in the church, if you used to contact them, send it to me, the man, and then I will disseminate it. I will delegate to the ladies. You can't go to them directly. They have that kind of autonomy. You know how it is.
We don't, but we do have an Instagram account.
We do have an Instagram account.
Boom.
A very small Instagram account that we don't post on very often, but maybe we will.
Yeah.
That's true, because I get a notification about once every 7 weeks that says Twin Sisters posted for the first time in a while. Ladies, you got to drive the brand. You can't just let it sit there.
I know. Well, that's why I told Ariane she's got to take a picture of her conference game board and post it on Instagram.
I'll put it up.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So anyway, how's everybody doing? How was conference? Just what are your general feelings right now in the wake of all of
this? It's nice just to have a conference that is like most conferences. You just listen to some great talks and not be blindsided by the newest policy or a structure change, you know? So I loved it.
Isn't it weird how only two conferences of doing that, now everyone expects that to be the norm? You could almost feel disappointment on Twitter. Like, guys, when are you going to tell me I can drink coffee? I heard this was happening.
So quiet. There was not much chatter going on. Huh?
But I just want it to be known. In our last podcast, I think we said, or at least I remember saying, I don't think we're going to have any big announcements this time. We didn't.
You did say that. So yeah, none of the rumors happened, I guess. I thought maybe the missionary one, but no.
What missionary one?
About the length of missions. If any of them were going to happen, I was thinking that one would, but.
That seemed more plausible for sure. I remember when they lowered the ages, 6 odd years ago now, Elder Holland, I think, was on missionary committee at the time. And so he was sitting with press, and someone asked him, like, why not do 2 years for the girls now? And he said, we're taking one miracle at a time. We think dropping it to 19 is the first step, and then who knows what'll...
We'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally none of the rumors took place. Uh-uh. We published a whole article about rumors.
Yeah.
We were clear saying, we're not saying this happening. We're just rounding up what we've heard. And like nothing, nope. Not a one. None.
Nothing.
I mean, I could go through the whole thing. Yeah. I won't, but well, not a single
one. And certainly no one could have predicted what happened on Thursday.
Oh, right.
And that was one we did not predict. So for those who are not aware, Tiffany, why don't you take us there?
Well, many of you recall back in 2015, the church published a little change in handbook number 1, and it got leaked out, and then the church had to deal with the PR fallout from that. And that policy was that children of parents who are gay and lesbian could not be baptized or could not be blessed unless they were 18 years old, or there had to be a special appeal to the first presidency. And that caused a lot of rife and strife within the church when that policy came out. And effectively on Thursday, they basically did away with the policy. They said children that of gay and lesbian parents can be blessed. They can be baptized. They have to, you know, of course, understand the covenants that they're making like any other child. But one of the larger issues was in that 215 policy, they stated that married individuals who were gay and lesbian, if they were in a same-sex relationship and married, would be considered apostates. And that was also removed. They still clarified it is still a sin, but it's not considered apostasy. And so Thursday morning, I got into my office and I hopped on Facebook, and at first I didn't believe it when I saw it. I was kind of shocked. It was a pretty quick reversal after 3.5 years.
I feel like nobody saw that coming.
Nobody saw that coming.
There's a lot of relief, I feel like.
Yeah.
Lots of people.
It's fascinating. Of course, now I recognize this because in the wake of President Eyring's talk in Priesthood last, it was Priesthood, right, Kurt? He spoke about supporting our leaders and, you know, not trying to
sustaining to, and
sustain them, not trying to look into the mortal foibles of them and things like that. I do think it helps to look through that lens sometimes just to remind ourselves we're dealing with humans, and that's a good thing. I think that informs my understanding of Revelation and the Spirit rather than treating the 15 like they're completely infallible and untouchable and they don't do anything wrong and they're not human beings, right? But, what's interesting to me is most anecdotal evidence at least hints that the original actors who might have pushed for what we did in 15 were likely then, well, President Oakes of the, he was president of the 12, sorry, President Nelson, and then Elder Oakes at the time, because President Johnson was pretty much not involved at that point.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most have suggested. So I find it even more interesting that 3.5 years later, driven by the man who's now leader of the church, the same thing went away, which is
that's
I think one of the most interesting parts of it to me. It's not like new leadership came in and said, like, those guys were way off.
Yeah.
We're fixing this one.
Exactly.
The same people, which is that's just me. That's
yeah, it's encouraging, right?
Yeah. What do you think about that, Kurt? What is that? Does that teach you anything? What does that tell you?
So as I've listened, you know, read different articles and heard different discussions around this topic, like everybody goes back to like, well, what does this mean exactly as far as Revelation's concerned? Because President Nelson, you know, I think at BYU Hawaii in an address mentioned, you know, underscored the fact that this was Revelation when that 2015 policy originally came out. And now people are saying, so it wasn't Revelation, or did God change his mind or whatever? But I just really feel like there is there's just not a full understanding about how Revelation truly works. And maybe I, just from my experience, you know, being being a key holder and, you know, serving as a bishop, like it just doesn't, I mean, it just ebbs and flows. And I really don't think, you know, that rarely does a scroll fall from heaven with certain revelation written on it that we're supposed to follow. And we say, well, so it wasn't God's will. Well, that doesn't matter because as like, to me, the way I see revelation is it's a two-way street. Revelation comes from heaven, but also revelation goes up to heaven. And that's the beauty of priesthood keys is that keys give individuals the power to direct. It doesn't give them the power to know every opinion and will of God, but it gives them the opinion to direct. And God influences those who direct the church. And we learn more about that in Doctrine and Covenants 128, verse 9, where it talks about if individuals who hold the keys and have the authority do so with the best intentions, I'm paraphrasing obviously, that what those things that they say will be seen as revelation and the will of God. And so the fact that they reverse this to me is just, that's just revelation. That's just how it works. And God's going to stand by and say, you know what, these are the individuals I have set apart and called to direct the church, and their opinions are in this, and their perspectives are in this. That's why he gives so much credence to counsel in the church, you know, that is how the messiness of revelation, how it works. So it's cool to see it happen. I'm glad it's sort of, you see on some things that get reversed, because that's how it happened in my experience on a smaller scale with, you know, running a ward. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think one of the speakers in conference said that revelation is more of a process than a destination, and that it's something that is kind of ongoing and not just, okay, this is our revelation and this is what we do and there's no more said and done on it. And I think that's really true, whether you're talking the church or whether you're talking your own personal revelation. You know, I think many of us have had the experience where, you know, you've received what you believe to be an answer to prayer, and it is an answer to prayer. And then you go and begin to act on that and something changes and you're moved in a different direction. And you think, well, why was I told to go that direction? But there's always learning and growth from that. Right.
And sometimes you never know why.
Yeah, sometimes you never know why.
Years later, you look back and, well, I don't know why I started down that road if I was ended up on this. So I don't know. It's hard to say, but the good news is there's just a lot of people relieved and happy about this. And it's good.
I think it's fun to talk about like how sometimes we receive inspiration, revelation to act in a certain way, and that doesn't take us where we want to go or where we think we want to go necessarily, but the Lord might be taking us somewhere that we wouldn't otherwise get to without taking that step. And I think it was Elder Hales actually spoke about that during a conference. I think it was the Saturday morning session. He was only the third speaker, but he kind of mentioned that prayers aren't answered that we want. Yeah. The Lord prepares blessings we can't, you know, expect. And our prayers aren't even always answered in this life. So it's a good reminder. But yeah, I too was stunned. I was, I've, on a more personal note, I don't ever say I made peace with the November 2015 decision. Kurt and I have talked about it at length. We even did a podcast on back then. You know, we had a panel back then about that one. It's kind of one of those things I kind of tucked away and said, I don't get this. I'm never going to be comfortable with this, but okay. Yeah. I'm just going to let it sit there and keep living my life and being a disciple and hoping that, you know, God and his leaders and everyone knows better than I do. So I had a hard time not being emotional when this happened on Thursday. I was kind of like, it was a pretty cool thing to see. And it seems so ostensibly minor. I mean, talking about what is a small subset of the population, even less so of Latter-day Saints, you know, of gay parents who want their kids to get baptized is not a big subset within our church. But it still matters because every group matters.
Right.
We talk about caring about the one, of course. They all matter. Mm-hmm. So it's great. I'm glad to see that this is happening. I think there are many people who are still upset about it. Yeah. People who want the church to apologize more formally and say this and just strip say, we botched this one, whatever it may be. I don't expect that to happen. But overall, it's, you know, it's great. Even if it's basically returning us to what was mostly the status quo 4 years ago, it's awesome. The one thing that I think is interesting about it, you know, you talked about the revision of the definition of apostasy,
yes,
right?
Yes,
right.
And they did say that, where do I have it written here? He said, so, okay, same-sex marriage is still a serious transgression, according to Elder Oaks, but it's not to be treated as apostasy when it comes to church discipline. He said, instead, the immoral conduct in heterosexual or homosexual relationships will be treated the same way. And I'm very curious about what exactly this means, because the immoral conduct in heterosexual relationships would be sexual violation, yeah, more or less, right? Mm-hmm. It's broadly speaking. And so if it's treated the same way, are we saying strictly sexuality of homosexuality, i.e. is this a tacit looking the other way when it comes to dating or kissing and holding hands when you're gay? Is that kind of a thing that no one's really asked questions about? I'm very curious. They didn't really outline it, and I think it's vague for a while. And I don't know if this kind of solidifies.
And did they even outline as far as, you know, if if a same-sex couple is legally married, you know, will that be approached differently? So there are some
questions. And that's the thing, because like, if you are legally married, then you say, well, you're obeying the law of the land. You're no different on paper than the heterosexual couple, except for, it's, I don't know how that's going to shake out.
Well, and I bet a lot will be, as it always has been, depend on your local leaders and what they choose to look at and not look at. I mean, we probably all know plenty of people that have been in a heterosexual relationship that are maybe living together, but they're new members of the church and they're not, you know, excommunicated or really disciplined at all. We're just happy to have them there to come into our congregations. And but there may be other leaders, you know, in other stakes that really would do something about that. So it's going to be interesting.
It will be interesting, to say the least.
That was a fun, this was a fun info drop before conference.
Yeah.
It's not something I would expect to talk about in conference itself. When the initial policy came out, it actually only came out, I believe it kind of got leaked out, if I'm not mistaken.
It got leaked out.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody had seen the handbook and then leaked it. And then the church had to address it in what I think was one of the biggest plunders of a PR disaster they have had in a long time.
I think they've learned a lot of lessons from maybe that, the execution of that, whether it was their fault or not, maybe some additional, you know,
rogue employee
security measures to make sure.
Security.
I don't know.
There's always going to be somebody write a leak handbook one when those updates go out, Kurt.
Someone. But I, on that note, Jeff, like, I've just really appreciated these Friday releases. I know this recent one, I think, was on a Thursday, but
They've had a lot of these,
I would almost speculate that this was a strategic adjustment to, instead of building up so much the rumor mill up going up to conference, like, just let these things go throughout and then handle them, you know, give information, just like the youth advancement news. I mean, that seems like the type of thing you would hear in conference, but they released it, you know, on a Friday in a press release, you know. And so I think that'll be the mode of operations going forward, and I appreciate that a lot more.
I like it too. It saves conference for, you know, the real meat.
Plus, it's kind of fun to wake up on a Friday morning and go, ooh, what's going to happen today?
But then that's the same thing as conference.
It is the same thing as conference.
How they're going to blow your mind.
Yeah, but then it's not distracting to the more meaningful talks. Yeah.
But then it messes up my work day, man. Come on. It's Friday. I know everyone coasts on Friday, but I still got things to do. And then this stuff comes up. It'll probably be that way when it comes to a lot of those conference rumors that went around.
Yeah.
I think there's a number of those. There's some of those, like, word of wisdom alterations. Yeah, that would be announced in conference. I don't think that would come through via a release like that. But some stuff, other stuff that was kind of leaked, I imagine that would have just been, or not leaked, whatever, rumored.
Yeah.
That would have just come via the Friday info drop. It is funny because in most of the world of journalism and media, Friday is where you some things that you want to get buried, right? This happens all the time. It happens in politics all the time, too. They release all this random stuff they're up to and hoping nobody's going to pick it up the weekend. But I imagine because we're a church and our focal point is Sunday, Friday is a great day to do it because then we get all revved up leading into the weekend.
And, right. Yeah.
And then they usually read the letter in sacrament meeting, right? From
letters.lds.lcr, whatever we're at right now, .churchofjesuschrist.org.
And there's no, you can't bury anything in this church.
It doesn't really work, man. So speaking of some changes, though, I'm going to jump all the way to the end of conference right now and talk about some of the new temples were announced. And I thought that
irreverently, Jeff.
I'll do my, and that's what I want to talk about.
Yes,
that's what we're talking about.
That was the one surprise, huh?
That was awesome. That was so good. I loved that everyone's expecting the temple announcements, especially after a conference that was, by all other measures, subdued compared to what we've been used to just for the past year. And of course, I remember President Nelson, maybe 6 months ago or maybe a year ago, hinted at the Pioneer Temples needing some extensive love. He kind of talked about that a while ago, so now he's formalizing it a bit more. That's a whole other topic. My two immediate takeaways: gut Logan and fix whatever the heck they did to it in the 1970s. If you ever been to Logan, is raise your hand. Who been to Logan? Anyone following on Facebook?
It's been a while.
Anyone following Facebook been to Logan? I went there once when I was at BYU. I drove up there on a whim to go check a new temple, and I was like, I was like, it's a state center.
I can't say that I've been to Logan.
Burlap.
I've only been for a ceiling. I don't remember much. But
okay, so Logan is on the outside, Pioneer-esque, right? You know, it's a beautiful, cool building. Inside, though, back in the late 70s, they had to totally gut all the original stuff and rebuilt it. And they built it to the time. And so on the inside, you're basically burlap walls shy of it being not far off from a meat house. I mean, there's a couple chandeliers here and there.
Yeah.
And as far as I remember, there are no real windows inside. And because if you actually look outside of the building, the windows, those arched windows, are actually painted black throughout. So there's a that's a shell around what is a just kind of sad little temple on the inside. Not to knock anybody, but it in some love more than the other ones, I would think. So I'm curious what will happen with that. And Manti... If you've ever been to Manti, everybody, I'm desperately praying they do nothing to Manti. Just leave hashtag leave Manti alone, everyone. Just start that.
I've never been to Manti.
Never been to Manti.
Ladies.
It's worth a road trip.
It's really worth a road trip. Manti is the only other temple that's live sessions.
Okay, like I know they do live. Is the inside just really cool or what?
The inside is like, I think it's been updated at some point, but it's old Pioneers. They haven't even put in soft fold-down chairs. You send the wooden benches that are original to the temple when it was built. I like the progression style of it a bit more. Salt Lake, you go to the first two rooms, then you go upstairs and do the rest. But in Manti, you slowly go up, 10 steps in between every single room. So you're kind of slowly winding your way to the top. And just the murals are crazy. The world room, they call it. Google that. Google Manti Temple world room mural. That thing's bonkers. There's the Crusades. There's all kinds of stuff on it. It's a very cool building.
A road trip,
maybe.
You should. I sincerely hope all I do is try to just update some of the mechanical stuff and maybe some funkin'. And otherwise, I think everyone's afraid they will de-live session that one and maybe even Salt Lake in this process. And I think that would be... That would be a tragic loss of our hero.
There's a Facebook comment here from Robert. He says, it was interesting to read the perspective from the Twitter feed as Sistas in Zion.
Oh, yeah.
She's disappointed with the instruction to remain quiet during the temple announcement. She loved that the saints vocally rejoiced. What's your take on this part of our culture that will probably never go away?
That's what I was going to get into. I love the President Nelson straight up said, look, I'm going to announce some temples, but let's rein it in this time, because I think it has gotten a bit out of hand. He's announcing temples, and it's gotten worse. It was fun in last April, and then last time, it's the whoop, whoop, everyone's just like cheering in the aisles. And and the funny thing about it, though, as I've been pondering this since the session ended, if you remember watching this at the same time, President Nelson seemed pretty amused by it. The whole thing, too.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised, because he seemed to enjoy it so much. I was kind of surprised that he wasn't going to enjoy it this time. I mean, he enjoyed it still, I'm sure.
He seemed to revel in it.
That was a polite dad smile of, we're going to talk about this later.
We misinterpreted that little smile he had.
That's right.
You heard, I think it was something a little bit different. I think genuinely, this is straight up just me making stuff up, but... I think that he genuinely did kind of get a kick out of the experience and kind of the drama of it. I mean, you know how it was, especially last time around when he intentionally went for the anticlimactic Washington County, Utah for his closer.
Right.
And everybody was like, what? I have to wonder if he pondered it more even after the fact, thinking about his own leadership And I don't know how he communes with the Lord, and perhaps he would, like, he might have also been chastised, is all I'm saying. That's complete conjecture.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
But, I don't think that'd be far off. How many times I've been a leader in the church, and there have been times I've done things and walked away and said, maybe this isn't the way it should be done. I should ponder a bit better.
I think this is something they're seeing in, not only in general conference, because my sister-in-law, I was at my in-law's house watching conference with them, and they and my sister-in-law just moved back from Peru, and she said that President Nelson went down there for a regional conference when she was down there, and there was this moment where he mentioned that he'll now speak in Spanish, and everybody, like, there was like everybody. There was an uproar of cheers and applause when he said that and started speaking in Spanish.
That's
and,
just the church in Latin America, though.
I know, but I think they're seeing this where it's like, well, maybe this is a good opportunity to draw a line as far as, you know, what we expect in as reverence. But maybe it is just in the context of announcing temples or in general conference.
But in general, I appreciated it. I mean, there was so much emphasis on temples this time around, and I liked it when we kind of brought it all home. Yeah. It said, these are sacred things. Be happy about it, but let's not get all crazy. So, real quick, just to recap, which ones are going to be built, the new ones that we're all curious about after the pioneer temples. So, you got Pago Pago, American Samoa, which we did predict, I believe, in our temp predictions. Thank you, Joe. Okinawa City, Japan. Nope, didn't predict it. Tonga, thought about predicting it, but didn't. Tooele Valley, Utah.
Just missed West Valley, Jeff. Just missed it.
Just missed it. I heard a lot about Tooele, but we decided to go with Heber or West Valley for funsies. But Tooele got it. Moses Lake, Washington is the one that's really prized me.
That was the surprise.
I have not done enough research on membership. Moses Lake it's in like smack dab in the middle of Washington State, but it's not a huge area in general. It's not
there's not much around it.
Yeah. And the Tri-Cities are only, 100 miles away, maybe? Ish from there, and there's a temple in
Tri-Cities
over there in the Columbia Gorge. Yeah, so that one intrigued me quite a bit. I've got to look into some of the metrics there for the membership for what's going on there. Good for them. Congratulations, Moses Lake people. A second temple in Honduras in San Pedro Sula, which is also one of the murder capitals of the world. So that's awesome that they get a temple there. I was about to make a glib joke about dead people temple. Nope, not gonna go that route. And Antofagasta, Chile. Awesome. Antofagasta is way up in northern Chile in the desert. For your history, it was once part of Bolivia until Chile stole it from Bolivia in the War of the Pacific in the late 1800s. And lastly, the one we've called for a little while, Budapest, Hungary, which is awesome. So I'm always partial to more temples in Europe. That's exciting stuff. Thoughts on any of these temples, people?
Okay, well, one thing I want to say on the pioneer temples, because at the very end he said that they're going to do, I believe on the 19th of April, which is another Friday, that they're going to release their plans for not only how they're going to redo the Salt Lake Temple, but they said how they're going to redo Temple Square and the Plaza. And I thought,
yeah, that's true.
I was blown away by that.
So, Elder Snow was the visiting authority at my brother's a stake president in West Valley, and he was the visiting authority there a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned that to my brother, that every building is going to be torn down except obviously the tabernacle, the temple, and the assembly hall.
So
right?
Even the
and
visitors, so the visitor centers too, huh?
All the visitor centers, yeah, coming down, and they're complete revamp.
When you say temple, does that include the annex, or is the annex?
Oh, the annex. The annex is coming down.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll actually let people get married and walk out of the temple doors instead of the goofy little, the little
some random pop up,
little soft tinted pop up thing that they do.
Yeah.
Here I am coming from work.
And they said they were going to rededicate them. So does that means they all get an open house, right?
Yeah.
Presumably, they didn't say that, but I would guess so.
That'd be fun.
That would be huge. Yeah. That would be huge, especially for Salt Lake. I mean, I remember in my art history class in college at UVU, they said that the Salt Lake Temple is the most studied religious building in the United States. I don't know if that's fact, but that's what they said. So you can imagine the attention it would bring if they actually opened it up to the public.
I'm just going to do a shout out here to Tim Corey, who's following us right now on Facebook. He said, make your bed. Sir, the bed isn't made because the laundry is being done. This is a guest room in the basement that no one sleeps on. So,
Jeff, I want you to know, I'm having a tact not...
The reason this is torn asunder, not as beautiful as Kurt's little studio when he has goofy things behind him, is because we're renovating some things. So anyway, yeah, Tim...
I'm in my grandma's bedroom right now, so...
Well,
I'm stoked about temples.
One more thing that I kind of wondered on the Salt Lake Temple, when they do the rededication of the Salt Lake Temple, if they'll do it like Nauvoo, where they open it up to the entire church membership to participate in.
I'm going to give that some pretty strong odds.
Me too.
Yeah. So good times, everybody. Good for Budapest. Any more of those in Europe. There's no temple between Germany and Ukraine. So good on them. Excited to see that.
And so sorry for Arkansas.
I think, is it time, for those who have followed our temple predictions, is it time to formally retire the Rogers / Bentonville, Arkansas prediction? Do I just let it die? Because I don't know if it's ever going to come true.
I think it will someday. I'd hold on. Keep holding.
By that logic, I can keep predicting something for 50 years, and then it finally happens.
Well, maybe you should just let it go, and then it will happen.
That's true.
And then guessing.
I predicted this for years.
So I'm going to let it
just
go.
Like just like the admission calls without dates or locations. If we say that enough, maybe it'll actually happen, and we will never get to a place where we can all agree that it's just a hoax and it's never going to happen.
Kurt, you raise an interesting point with that one, though. I mean, how does that one happen? Because people produce facsimiles, I guess, but of calls that say this very thing. Mm-hmm. Is there a whole cottage industry of people producing fake mission calls just to perpetuate this?
I have no idea, but whenever you hear these announcements, it's always like the sister of a brother's cousin. You know, it's right.
And has anybody ever seen the paperwork? I've heard it, and I've heard people say this is real because this is my cousin's in-law, but I've never actually seen the physical paper.
It's a hoax. It's not going to happen.
Kurt, you know people on the inside. Can you just get a firm?
I do not know people on the inside.
Well, however, I don't know people on the inside. I used to be in Kate Kelly's. I think they're talking to me.
There's an individual in the priesthood department, and I was talking to him after last conference about the 2-hour church, and obviously he was working a lot with it, the plans there. And he said, you know, I heard a lot of people mention that there were these test groups, or these, what's the word?
You have to
use, like, there's these boards that were testing it out, testing the 2-hour.
And
he's like, and he's like, that was news to me. We didn't have any like people testing to our church.
Really? Because I totally heard that one.
I know, me too.
I heard they did it in South America.
The whole
program. Didn't we hear they were doing it like in Pleasant Grove? One of your friends said her brother or somebody in Pleasant Grove was doing it.
It's always a brother, a sister, or like
an in-law.
Oh, you people who live in the Zion realm.
That's right. Join us, Jeff.
Very different.
Actually, we're both, myself and the twin sisters, we're all in Idaho right now.
But are you in Western Idaho like they are?
Yeah, I'm in the more chosen part of Idaho, right? Yeah.
Really? Where you're also that?
I'm in Blackfoot right now.
That's Eastern Idaho, man.
That's where my wife is from, so.
Oh.
We'll send our condolences. Idaho.
I'm getting out of Dodge here.
Utah.
Kurt, they know, is Blackfoot going to fall under the Pocatello Temple District when it's done?
It is, yeah.
I would assume it would. They just broke ground on that. That's exciting for them.
They did.
Well, we've hit a lot of stuff nearly 40 minutes into our show. And conference highlights, people. We don't have to go through a talk. We used to try to do that, but that's not necessary. But I do want to talk about the highlights and the big takeaways. And
Can we take at least by session?
Yeah, we can go by session. So let's visit the Saturday morning session, which we had. I'll give you a lineup, so this way it's like a bracket. All right. Elder Ulysses Suarez of the 12, Becky Craven of the Young Women's General Presidency, Brooke P. Hales of the 70, who has one of the best stories to being called of any 70 I know, Dieter F. Dorf, and W. Christopher Waddell of the Presiding Bishopric, and Henry B. Eyring of the First Presidency, all spoke to us that session. I only joke about Elder Hales because what happened was last year after the conference and called new general authority 70s, a month later they issued a press release and said, so we've called Brooke P. Hales as a general authority 70. Basically, we were supposed to fill one more and forgot to do it. That's essentially what they said. And so they said, you're our
secretary. And he was in the room.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, you over there.
He's the secretary for the first presidency, and he still is, even as a 70. So I swear it's like, yeah, he's still doing that. So anyway.
Well, Well, I really liked his talk. I thought his talk was great. His was one of my favorite from the Saturday morning session because he talked a lot about righteous desires. And I really liked the stories that he told in his talk where he talked about his son with the missionary and they purchased him a coat. The coat was too small and he had a companion who needed it. And then he was talking about the sister who was blind who never always had a positive attitude about it. And I just really liked what he said about sometimes our righteous desires are granted in this life and sometimes they're not.
Yeah. He had good stories.
He had very good stories. Sometimes you just have to wait and be patient. I really love the stuff from W. Christopher Waddell, the presiding bishopric. That was pretty interesting. When he talked about his brother, who hadn't really been involved in church, for a long time. He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which is one of the most fatal of cancers with which you can be diagnosed. And so about 5 hours, it turned out, before he passed away, he was able to ordain his brother to the office of elder about 50 years after he became a priest, and then his brother passed away. Now, That's a crazy story in and of itself, but I loved how much it highlights the importance of ministering to the one, of going out of your way to do the right thing for the right people at the right time. We have to invite people to change. That's the other note I took down. They're not going to do it on their own. You got to shake people down sometimes, even when they don't want it. They're going to say, leave me alone. They're going to say, I'm on the do not contact list. And you're going to say, that's more of a suggestion. We're going to not contact.
That's right.
We'll take that under advisement.
Sorry, everyone. I don't mean to.
Well, one of the things that Elder Updorf said that I'm waiting for the cutesy meme to pop up on Pinterest any minute now is his three words of believe, love, do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what were his 5 points? I was wrestling with children at the time when he got into 5 points. I wrote down that there were 5 points. But
there were five
points. So it was draw close to God, okay. Fill your heart with love for others, strive to walk the path of discipleship, share what is in your heart, and trust the Lord to work his miracles. So this was the first of, I felt like, a few missionary-themed talks or the gathering of Israel, that sort of thing. And it would be interesting to hear those that are listening on Facebook Live, what sort of themes popped out. You can put them in the comments. We want to recognize our studio audience here. It's not.
No one's
virtual studio
no
audience.
One cares.
That's how you do this, Jeff. That's how you do Facebook Lives, okay?
Is that right? I don't even let people see me. I have a face for radio, as they say.
One thing
please continue.
Oh, just stop going on Uchtdorf. One other thing I liked is he pointed out when he was talking about being a missionary that we should find normal and natural ways to do it. And I like that he pointed that out because I think sometimes we can get real awkward. So I appreciated
real fast.
Real awkward, yeah. Real fast. So I appreciated he said, find a normal and a natural way to bring it up and let it be.
Well, and I think we've turned missionary work like we think it's like walking across the street and knocking on the door of our neighbor with a Book of Mormon in hand and then awkwardly like trying to convince them to take it. When in reality, it's like, no, you walk over and you talk to them at their mailbox when they're getting, they're just about life, right? And build that relationship until they bring it up or there's an opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking at some of our Twitter notes that we had there too. I've seen the same thing. Like I realized years ago that when people, you go to work and such, and people ask how your weekend was, and I'd pretty much only recap Saturday. Just talk about what I did on Saturday, because in my mind, that's the weekend. Sunday is that other day for Latter-day Saints, where we go to church and stuff, but it's not like the weekend, So I started trying to be not in the face, just dropping stuff and saying, I went to church, or I teach six-year-olds, so I taught a lesson. Not going, not giving someone a big lecture out the whole block, but just trying to mention it more. Because people aren't weird about that. If you know it's a part of someone's life, whoop-de-doo. It doesn't matter how heavily Latter-day Saint or not your population is. I think that helps quite a bit. It's sort of the soft power approach to missionary work. And we still have to invite people and be bold at times. But like Kurt was saying, just, you know, build a relationship with somebody and just be honest about who you are and what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's so hard to do that. But it seems so obvious to be that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I did a Twitter poll during this talk just to find out, not a huge sample or anything, but said, when this does come up, if you're meeting people, if you're building new relationships, talking about faith or religion, do you still use the term Mormon to refer to yourself just out of time and convenience versus something longer, like I am a Latter-day Saint, I'm a member of the Restored Gospel, yada, yada, yada. A full 62% of respondents said they still call themselves Mormon in situations like that. That's a... I don't know if that's just interesting or if that is damning people. I'm not quite sure. But
call them out, Jeff. I want names. We need to publicly shame names. These people.
I thought that was interesting. But, I still kind of say Mormon because I feel like when I say that, people get a quicker idea of what that means in a good way, I think. But I don't know.
I just say, you know, like Mitt Romney. That seems to work.
It worked for Mitt. He's the best. Okay.
Actually, it did not work for Mitt, Jeff. I don't know if you...
He's a senator from Utah now. He's filling the very large shoes of Orrin Hatch, sir. But we don't get political on this program, so that's all we'll say about that. The other one I want to mention, nobody's mentioned it yet, Becky Craven. I've seen polarized response to this one. Anybody have thoughts on this without me saying anything about it on her talk?
I don't remember that one much. I think I was dealing with children.
I remember it. It wasn't my favorite.
Okay. So Timmy has issues. Why? In a polite and respectful way.
And probably this is just the lawyer in me. I'm going to give that disclaimer first. But, you know, she seemed to be very black and white in her approach. And, you know, are we careful or casual? And rationalizing counsel, you know, am I rationalizing? And I rationalize every day in my job. It's part of who I am. I don't know. I just...
I figure out ways to lie to make money.
I'm more of a gray person than a black and white person, and she was very black and white, so I probably need to ponder her talk a little bit more.
But you will not ponderize anymore because Brother Durant is out of Sunday school presidency.
No, I will not ponderize. I will simply ponder.
I did like, though, that she mentioned, you know, we're not perfect. We can be worthy, and that's a subtle relationship, yes, that I think is good for us to remember. We get so hung up, and you hear stories of members of the church being depressed with like the high standards supposed to live and how impossible it is and how difficult it can be. But we should remember that that's a work in progress. Yeah. The important thing is to be worthy. Be worthy of the temple. Be worthy of the Lord's blessings. That doesn't mean a perfect person. Be worthy.
I just wish we could get rid of the worthy word altogether in our lexicon. That I just, well, I get what they're saying, and I think you understand, but it's hard to get away from the I'm not perfect, and when you say I'm not worthy. Like, yeah. I think it's just too close, okay, too synonymous. But to me, it's like whenever I want to say the word worthy, I always default to spiritually prepared. And I feel like that's a little bit more of a... term that I can embrace. That's not just because we're all worthy, like, of God's love. Like, we're all worthy of so much, regardless of our behaviors, right? So it'll probably never go away. But that's just how I see it.
In your defense, though, I mean, they have moved some things away. Like, obviously, we're on kind of a bender almost of removing shorter, more succinct terms to describe ourselves and aspects of our culture, right, and using much longer form things. Because, like, if we didn't say worthy, I think there's some precedent, because if you look at Preach My Gospel now, they updated it last fall, or a little earlier than last fall, but to no longer call investigators investigators. They're called people who are being taught. And you don't call less actives that anymore. Now they're all called returning members. So we're in the habit of using longer terms anyway. So what did you say it was? What was the term again, Kurt?
Spiritually prepared.
Spiritually prepared. Beautiful.
I do like that.
It's
like
gonna
that
catch
a lot.
On. Yeah. keep saying it. It'll catch on.
All right, moving along. Sunday afternoon session. We had M. Russell Ballard, Matthias Held, Neil L. Anderson, Takashi Wada, David P. Homer, and Jeffrey R. Holland. Quick poll of everyone listening and talking right now. Who gave the best talk of that session?
Holland. Jeffrey R. Holland.
Kurt, do you agree or disagree?
Okay, to be completely honest, I fell asleep before that talk started, but I did listen to it
Kurt,
after.
You are not spiritually prepared. What is wrong?
No. Shame me, Jeff. I can take it. But no, it was great. I mean, Elder Holland could talk about anything, yes, and just his cadence and the way it,
yes,
it is what
he's so good at lovingly chastising us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that in an absolutely positive way.
I totally felt after listening to his talk that had anybody else said those things, I would have been like, oh yeah, yeah, be more reverent, take the sacrament seriously. Yes, yes, good we hear point. It all the time. But him saying it very much, it just, the way he speaks, it just gets to me. And in a loving way, very much, I thought, yes, this is something I need to be better at. This is something I could work on. This is something my family could work on. And it's important. And coming from him, yeah, I took it very differently than I feel like I would have taken it from anybody else.
So. Elder Cook. I know you're thinking Elder Cook.
Plus, I think Elder Holland had the best tie of the whole entire session.
I am the tie tracker guy, but I don't remember what he had.
He had on this lovely navy and gold striped tie, and the gold was like a really shiny gold, and they were wide stripes. He looked sharp.
Sounds like something he might have worn when he was president at BYU. Sounds a little 70s 80s action there.
Yeah, it was a very bold choice compared to some of the other ties I saw.
He's a bold fella. I mean, he gets in there. I got to go back and read it and watch it again. I love the reminders of just, it's funny because he talked about bishoprics who have taken the time to set an example of reverence. That was great for me to hear because that happened. Our ward does that. Our bishoprics usually up there doing that. But I've been in other wards before where a little bit beforehand, the bishop is usually kind of walking around like greeting people, saying hi in a reverent way, not in a crazy, we're all happy to see each other, slap backing kind of way. And I was thinking we visited an old ward that did that. And I was like, I miss that. I miss kind of the more friendliness, like the bishops walking around, getting to know people. So it was interesting to me that Elder Holland took the time to say, it might be better if you're just sitting on the stand 10 minutes till and setting the example of reverence, because we've all forgotten how sacred the sacrament is. And like, are we taking it seriously enough? That was pretty solid. I felt smacked around a bit. I'm just trying to get my kid. One of my children will not eat the bread. It's an ongoing effort. It's the dumbest thing in the world. He won't eat
bread. He won't eat it? My kid wants 5
pieces. Yeah, same
the other here. Kid will eat all the other kid will eat all the bread we give him. But my older son, he finally revealed to me the other week it's because he doesn't usually like bread with crust on it. So I'm gonna see if I can find a crustless piece and check in next week, everyone, and I'll let you know.
Those how are a it hot, goes. Hot commodity. I feel
your
like weight my is kids...
bated breath.
Yeah, my but, kids search for those crustless ones. They're a hot commodity.
That was just such a reminder. It's so easy to treat the sacrament like it's just this, it's just a thing we do. You know, we show up at the sacrament, then skedaddle, have to go to your lessons and stuff like that. But that was a powerful talk.
Well, and I wrote down something he said that I really liked. He said, be mindful of other broken hearts and contrite spirits around you. I really liked that. Because sometimes we get so caught up in us and what's going on with us that, you know, we fail to realize there are other members of the congregation there who may be struggling, and coming to sacrament and partaking is a big deal for them.
Mm-hmm. Another one who did great, M. Russell Ballard. I thought Elder Ballard this time around, for me, it can be a little hit and miss what Elder Ballard decides to cover. Mm-hmm. But this weekend, I think he was solid. He talked a lot about simplification. He literally wrote the book on how to run meetings, if any of you have read that. But I'm trying to see what my notes say, though. But yeah, I love the reminder, one, that I forget this, that Satan is miserable. It's easy to think that Satan's actually having a good time and he wants to kind of like have a good time with us, and that's part of it. But no, Satan is just straight up miserable. And so his reaction is to drag everyone else down with him because he's just sad, essentially, and frustrated. And he also, of course, kind of quelled any rumors that the testimony aspect of fast and testimony meeting would be going away. That was another rumor. Because he addressed that and said, like, make your testimonies worthwhile. So we could assume we're still going to keep doing them. But I dug that. Kurt, you've been quiet. Any thoughts here? Observing?
No, this was, I'm trying to think, the other Elder Anderson's talk was...
He did the family proclamation.
That's right.
All in.
Yeah, I mentioned there. And it was, I don't know. I mean, I always try and give respect to those individuals who touch on really difficult subjects that would be very easy just to not talk about, you know? And there may be some people that were upset about the way he said things, but, you know, I appreciate him trying, so.
I think he did fine. And I thought about things sort of the same way you did, Kurt. And I haven't, one thing I thought about was, you know, we talk about the family proclamation quite a bit, but we rarely have references to the document of the living Christ. You don't hear much about that, right? It exists.
Yeah.
It's another thing we have that's not canonized, just like the family proclamation. But in looking at Twitter, there was some interesting feedback that sort of echoed what Kurt said of just saying, well, is the living Christ as controversial or as difficult for people to digest? It's a document that talks about our living Christ versus the family proclamation, which might need a little more time from an apostolic point of view to address and reiterate and have people understand, which was, that was good counsel for me. That's all.
And just so you know, Jeff, Al has just joined the Facebook Live. If you want to say anything to Al.
Hi, Al.
If, are you Al, still
Al,
talking?
It's not too late. You want to set your rig right now, buddy, and just jump right in.
Let's do this, Al.
Shock everybody. Come on in, man. It's up to you. Any other feedback from the Saturday afternoon session?
No.
Who gave?
Priesthood session was phenomenal, I thought.
Tell us why. Take me there.
Well, I just appreciated the, especially the Band of Brothers story for Elder Cook, the 70 Elder Cook. That was like just so inspiring to hear how, I mean, what a great example of what a healthy quorum looks like and what a healthy quorum produces, and to see it happen in that youth context and, you know, in Africa, and to see many of those young men serve missions. I was just like, ah, that's what I needed to hear. That was a fun one.
Yeah. This was right in your leadership wheelhouse, wasn't it?
That's right. So,
can I say something about the priesthood session?
Yes.
I didn't go, so obviously I didn't hear all the talks. But the first thing I asked my husband when he got home was, did they challenge you guys to read the Book of Mormon in 2 months have a social media fast?
No, we do what we want. Go.
I was a little disappointed. I thought that you'd at least give you guys a Book of Mormon challenge. Yeah.
And President Nelson was, I thought he was getting there because he was mentioning, you know, sports and smartphones and being distracted from family, but then he didn't.
I thought he was going to go all in and say, so here's the deal. You know, social media is not your issue. Your issue is
keeping video focus. Games.
Yeah, I thought he was going to say, like, I want you to fast from sports and gaming, more or less, which would have been awesome because then I wouldn't have had to change much of anything in my behavior, and I would have loved it. But yeah, he didn't go there. I was surprised.
But I think it was a, I don't know, I don't, me myself, I don't, I mean, obviously they can do whatever they want, and I'm not trying to critique this, but I just don't think giving challenges or like that type of approach is really healthy for our culture, just because everybody's like, okay, I've got to do these, I've got to check this box and, and move on with it. Yeah. And so everybody does it. But I feel like the way that President Nelson handled it was effective. You know, he got his message across, said, you know, you really need to consider these things, and then left it up to everybody to kind of walk away like, wow, you know what? I could probably do some things different. Let me figure that out, you know, personally.
Yeah, which is nice. But of course, going back to Sister's point, why didn't he leave the same open invitation for the sisters to figure it out? Instead, he's like, get on social media and read the
performance. I think they learned from that. I don't know.
maybe that's what happened. Maybe the sisters got a little overzealous and like comparing, and I don't know.
Could be.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they said, we need to simmer down. I don't know.
Yeah. Because I know from my wife's experience, like she's really, I mean, in my opinion, she doesn't obsess over, you know, the Instagram, or she's not on her phone a lot. And so when it came out, she just sort of felt like, well, why am I doing this? Like, I I mean, I'll do it, I guess, but I don't feel like I need to, you know? And so it was just sort of awkward for some people. But
Can I, this is not as affirming, but can I reference something that might have been, this might be the polemist in me a little bit. This is the same session. And so at the end of it, you have the president of the church, you know, sort of getting on the case about the too much time with that, you know, athletics and such, and how we dress and groom and appear, make ourselves appear, are we modest, all sorts of things as men. This is good counsel. But if we do go back to the first speaker in the pre-session, Elder Stevenson, and I'm mostly just ribbing a little here, he based his entire talk on how amazing athletes are and how much they can teach us about the church and how we should follow them, and citing like Bryce Harper. And I'm kind of cracking up like, oh, I mean, he showed a picture of Bryce Harper getting married. Bryce Harper has his not honor code approved haircut, shall we say. It wouldn't fly at the testing center at BYU. He's fine. He's doing good things. But at the same time, I couldn't help but kind of laugh to myself like Elder Stevenson's propping him up like, look at this guy who's doing awesome things. And then in the same session, President Nelson's like, part your hair nicely and shave and look good. Oh, say what is truth? I don't know.
Well, I guess you could say there was just something for everyone then in that session.
That's true.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was good. It was good.
It was great.
Also, Utter Oaks gave some, he talked about the future, which was interesting. And I also thought the story about the squirrel was kind of sad and brutal. And if you went up to Tiffany and Ariana,
he was dead. I just remember that. It was too late. He was dead.
Yeah. Like, it's not like some cute story. Like, nope, a bunch of people watched a squirrel get killed by a dog. And the moral of the story is get in there and save the squirrel when you have a chance, I guess. Because it was too late. The squirrel was dead.
Dead squirrel. It was good.
But one interesting thing that someone pointed out. So President Oaks said, we talked about labeling ourselves. Well, this will lead, where will this lead is also important in choosing how we label or think of ourselves. Most importantly, each of us is a child of God with a potential destiny of eternal life. Every other label, including occupation, race, physical characteristics of honors, is temporary or trivial in eternal terms. Don't choose to label yourselves or think of yourselves in terms of limit on a goal for which you might strive. I love the council overall, but some people pointed out that he said race and wondered, does that mean that race is not an eternal designation? I don't think I quite got there from his comments, but I found that to be an interesting interpretation. Right, Kurt? You were there. It flew right by.
I was there. No, I did catch that, and I was like, I need to think about that. That is interesting, but I think people are reading into it a little bit too much.
Probably. Oh, yes, and Amanda Hostler, yes, there was a dead squirrel. This is what we do in pre-sed session. Thank you for the comment. This is what we talk about. The ladies wondered for years, what kind of shenanigans do we get into? I used to tell my wife we taught spells and stuff like that before they started broadcasting it on the internet, which ruined all of my fun. But, Elder Oaks talked about a dead squirrel and the murder of a squirrel. And that coupled with the almost dead skydiver later in session this morning, I thought this was a very morbid conference. Just death all around to teach lessons.
They got
to
keep the attention, you know.
I suppose so. All right. Are we good to go to
Sunday morning, Jeff?
All right. Take it there. Sunday morning, people. Tell me things.
I'm very much intrigued by Elder Renlin.
Yes.
His talk.
I liked Renlin.
I spent some time there. But and I appreciate, this is a doctrine I have been, I don't want to say struggling with, but trying to fully understand so I can better articulate it, because just this idea of we get no blessing unless we earn it through our actions just does not seem, there's just no room for grace in there. Mm. And so I appreciate him expounding upon that doctrine and clarifying it a little more deeply so that there is room for grace, a lot of grace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was really good. I loved the clarification because it is a very confusing doctrine. We hear both different ways about it, and I liked his example of the fire and the kindling. I loved what he said at the very end, how he brought it back to the come follow me with our families. And he said some line about, are your come follow me manuals and scriptures sitting in a pile and like a pile of kindling waiting to be lit in your home? And I was kind of like, maybe. I mean, we've been trying, but there's more we can do. And so I liked that he brought it back to that, because that was a good example for me. of what I need to be doing.
Come Follow Me for me has been surprisingly not easy. I actually thought it would be easier to go after than it has been. It's me worth too. It, with completely, you. But it's, what was that, Kurt?
I'm with you. It's just, I mean, we've tried to build a routine around it, and obviously we need to do better there. But I really appreciate Elder Renlund and then later Elder Bednar just there. I mean, I felt invigorated and motivated, like, okay, like I get it. Like, this is... It was a good reminder of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, here. I felt like a lot of speakers hit on it in their talks and trying to remind us and encourage us and also just kind of like do it, you know, just do it.
There was you should coin that phrase. And
Maybe with a little swoosh.
Yeah.
Little swish. Yeah, there was a lot. Yeah, there was a good tone of just like, guys, get up off the mat and let's get stuff done. I felt that throughout all the sessions. Yeah. Anybody have any thoughts on Sister Eubanks' talk? I love her. She's awesome.
Sister Eubank is the female Elder Uchtdorf. Everybody just loves Sister Eubank, right? It's just, and which rightly so. I mean, she just has a way of presenting things in a way that's relatable and it's real, and she seems real, you know, not that others don't, but she just has a
knack. I loved, she talked about, you know, the Salt Lake Temple, she has a view of it, and the lights went out one time, they didn't come on at the right time when it was getting dark. And I love the line, as people addressed it and fixed it and found all the issues to make sure it worked, she said, it's hard to get lights back on by yourself. I love the way she led to that, because you didn't think she was going there. Explained that it took a whole team to fix this thing. Yeah. And she reminds us of ourselves. Like, the temple is this sacred place, and it needs to be lit. It takes a village, so to speak, to make that happen. We need friends. We need each other. We need to support one another. And it's so easy to live the gospel by yourself and assume that you're just kind of on your own figuring this out, and hopefully people will do it, and hopefully you'll have some friends at some point. But like, we can lean on each other a lot more than we do. I mean, I tried to do that once in my elder quorum years ago, get us to be more real with each other, so to speak, and not just kind of go through the motions like we always do, but know each other and support one another. And if we do that, we'll be way, way more strengthened. And the Lord knows what we're doing, knows how hard we're working. Mm-hmm. And he knows that our sacrifices are not in vain, as Sister Eubank says. But yes, she is the female Uchtdorf. Absolutely, Kurt.
Yeah.
I did love Elder Cook's talk as well. And he wasn't the only one who talked about this. There were several that talked about this. And maybe I just was attuned to this because my new calling is family history person for the ward, family and temple history person for the ward. And he was talking about, you know, there was a lot of talk about home-centered church and that our meetings on Sunday support our home-centered church, and that the family history center, we each have our own little individual family history centers in our home via the internet, and we go to the church for support, not the other way around.
And you probably love that because you're like, I don't have to sit there all the time helping people print cards and stuff.
Except now I have to go to their houses and teach them at their houses.
Is that how it is now? You're on call.
I am on call, but before I can be on call, I have to figure out what I'm doing because I don't know what I'm doing yet.
It seems that you're showing people how to use the internet. That's what I'm understanding is.
Yeah. Well, see, then I have to figure out how to use it first.
Don't you know by now we're technically challenged?
I know the Twin Sisters are Luddites by default, but you're doing great things. You've come so far. So far. Yeah. The family history stuff is something we should be more grateful for than we are. I mean, even just it was less than a month ago, they said they announced some minor updates, but now you can take, they don't want people taking their cell phones in the temple, but smartphones are a reality at this point. So you can take them as far as the desk in order to print cards when you're there. Now you can scan a barcode on the spot and do it. Just little things like that. It's made the work so much easier. I mean, when they started letting you do cards at home and doing the majority of that work by yourself, it made a huge difference to me as far as how much I was getting done. Because taking the time to go to the Family History Center, while a great resource that we had for so long, wasn't as convenient as what we have now. And so it's a good point. Good
reminder. Yeah, it's changed a lot.
No one met Elder Christofferson, but you don't have to. I thought that was surprising.
Yeah, I'm still gnawing on that talk. I've actually listened to it twice, and his are always sit down and read.
Yeah, his takes some time. So. I like though that he said this is the Lord's. We have to remember while we're doing all this work, we should pause to remember it's the Lord's work. He is doing it. He is Lord of the vineyard. He lets us labor in the vineyard this last time, but he does labor with us, which is a good reminder. I like that a lot. He's not just standing dictating. It's not like an Eagle Scout project. You know, he's actually there doing all the work.
In the trenches.
Mm-hmm. He's in the trenches.
And then this session ended off with President Nelson, a strong talk about, taking the steps to be with your family and obtain those ordinances and not put it off because time is running out. I mean, the end of his talk is ended like that. They got a lot of buzz just because, like, wow, it's kind of scary when the prophet says time is running out.
Yeah.
I keep thinking of the Muse song every time I hear that. My time is running out. You know what I'm talking about? Yep. No.
I'm not with you there, Jeff.
You nodded as if you knew of what I spoke. All right, whatever. I'll make the outro music on this episode. I think President Nelson seems to be a very affable, approachable individual, but like leading off talking about his daughter passing away.
I mean, oh yeah,
stuff got real right there. Yeah. All of a sudden, you're like, dude, he's like letting us in a little bit beyond the professional level here.
That was kind of amazing to hear him recount that and get a little bit emotional about it. Of course, and. Yeah.
Well, and I think very humanizing as well, because, you know, sometimes we put our prophets up on this pedestal, and to see him and the emotions that he's going through in the death of a child that all of us deal with when mm-hmm. we face death. Mm-hmm. I was very glad he shared that with us.
Yeah, me too.
That was really touching. Any other thoughts on Sunday morning before we venture toward a final session?
Let's go to the final set.
Go to the final. Let's
all right,
bring it
I'm
home.
I'm going on you guys a lot because at this point, the behavior of my children had evolved quite a bit. And so my notes are a little bit more sparse. Like, this is literally what it says for President Oaks. My notes say, repentant, comma, cleansing, period. No idea. That's all
I Well, did you like Oaks? Tiffany usually likes Oaks, because I think they speak
lawyer
the
to
same
lawyer.
Lawyer language.
It's lawyer to lawyer. What can I say? So, you know, I really did like him. He was. The focus of his talk was on repentance. And he said, you know, an unrepentant person will remain unclean at the final judgment. And he was basically saying, you know, because he was kind of debunking the myth that, oh, you can just repent in the spirit world, because he was saying, you know, we don't really know if that is true. The best place to do your repentance is here on earth, where your spirit and body are in the same, are together, because it could be a lot harder in the spirit world. And so whatever you have to take care of it now. And he talked about how the resurrection will restore a perfect body, but that doesn't necessarily mean the sins, the things that we have committed that we haven't repented for, are going to be restored in perfect form. We have to take care of it now, is what he was saying. And use the atonement. He really focused on the atonement, and he said the atonement is an open door for everyone to go through and repent. So take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Kurt, do you have anything to add? Because I don't.
Yeah, I know. I was looking somewhere. I appreciated the straight talk. You know, you even mentioned individuals who are excommunicated or have removed their name from the church. And there was, in a few places, a constant call to them to return. Even President Nelson said, you know, as the president of the church, you know, however he said it, I'm calling to you, you know, to come back and repent. And I thought there was one place, I don't know if it was in this talk or in this priesthood talk, but President Oak said something that, you know, repentance isn't meant to be like a punishment or something. Mm-hmm. And
it was this talk.
Yeah. And I wish when he said that, I was like, well, I wish that would mean we'd stop calling it a disciplinary council. Like,
love. You've got to love.
Right, but that's not the official name, and that's the name that people mock us with. I just wish we could remove the discipline of repentance, because all the discipline happened on Christ, and you know, and I don't know. So, but it was a fantastic talk around these doctrines that that I'm excited to dive back into.
One I did manage to really get in on, Elder Bednar's talk, I'm a big Elder Bednar lover. I always love his talks. And maybe this is like your lawyer things. I hardly fashion myself an academic, but at the same time, I think his approach is very academic in the way he explains things. And I love his talks. He always says, like, you know, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to explain to you in three easy steps how we achieve these things. And then afterwards, I will issue a closing statement about it. So, you know, we talked all about Joseph. But then what I really loved, even after saying that the most important Sunday learning we do in the home, that was a great reminder about how I'm failing. Come follow me. But then he talked about the temple. And this was so good and important, I think, especially in light of some changes that happened in the temple in January that caused everyone to say, don't say anything about the temple outside of the temple. Yeah. You say nothing. And I was like, I don't know if that's exactly true, but okay. And I got that a lot, right? Nobody would say anything at all. Yeah. So I love that Elder Bednar tried to take the time to help us understand the line a bit better and how we can go about these things. And it really comes down to common sense, right? But I think even sometimes with common sense, we're afraid we're wrong. But, you know, his basic guidelines were, and I tried to write these down verbatim, but he says, because we love the Lord, we should always speak about his house with reverence. Check. We should not disclose or describe the symbols associated with the covenants we receive in temple ceremonies. Check. I think that's pretty obvious if you've been to the temple.
Yeah.
The second point, the temple is the house of the Lord. Everything points to Christ. We may discuss the basic purposes for and doctrine of and principles associated with temple work and covenants. Those were his two main guidelines. And I think that gives us a lot of room, respectfully, to talk about temple. Because he made the point, and I feel like I went through this myself, that people go and they're like, either in your home you're not enthusiastic about going, or you're not really, really prepped. And then it doesn't mean much to you, or it's harder to digest, whatever it might be. We can do a lot more to have people feel more prepared so they understand what the temple is really all about. Because there's so much about it we can talk about in a positive way. And just don't get into the specifics of, exact things that he mentioned. I think that's totally true. Good count.
Well, and the other thing he did is he referenced some of the resources that are available online that you can show your children as you are preparing them for the temple. You know, I just had a missionary daughter. Right. She's on a mission now. She went through the temple in December. And, I mean, I had no prep when I went through. And I prepped her extensively, you know, within the boundaries of what was appropriate.
Sure.
But she ended up having a great experience. And she's like, when do I get to go back? Because she was adequately prepared for it. Mm-hmm.
Makes a big difference for sure. Yeah, he sent everybody to the website. And then I also love he gave like a list of things to look up in the Bible dictionary to study more about temples. I was frantically writing those down too. Just all good ideas of what we can.
He gave us homework, Jeff, just like an academic would.
Oh,
yes.
Academics don't give you homework. They give you reading. You just get reading.
Right, reading. Yes. Right. And there may be a quiz.
No. The quiz is just reading and writing papers. No, that's all reading. It is. Reading and writing.
And a lot of it.
That's all you do. Yeah, this was great. I hope people will embrace this and realize that we can do more. Because I even feel like our temple prep curriculum. Mm-hmm. Kind of, there's kind of some holes in it. It's been a while since I've done it, but I think we're going to a great place where we can be more open about that. He was kind of my last solid talk that I leaned in on. I liked what I heard Elder McKay saying and the way he said. He had a beautiful cadence.
Yeah, he was a performer.
Yeah. But I
wanted him to read some Shakespeare.
Yes, some Shakespeare, Kurt. Globe Theater up in this business. That's
he did remind us that deliverance may take longer than we would like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But time is running out.
Other one to mention, two other apostles left. And if you have any thoughts, Elder Gong and Elder Rasband. Anyone have anything on them?
There was an interesting photo going around on Twitter of President Hinckley at Elder Gong's wedding. And it was it's worth looking.
Why have I not seen this? And how do you send
it to me right now? Okay, I'll look it up. But I think Elder Gong's wife is the daughter of a general authority or pastor.
They always know somebody. They're all related.
Right? But good old young Elder Gong was there, just naive as ever. So,
wow.
I'll find it.
Yeah, that'd be fun to see.
That's so awesome. I liked his talk, though. I mean, he talked all about how the good shepherd acts and how we as the sheep should act. Basically, sheep are reckless and they're the shepherd. So.
Yeah, I thought it was good. And I loved how he said, he pointed out that the good shepherd went after the one while still watching the 99.
Yeah.
I thought that was important to remember. Like, don't forget those who are may appear to not be struggling as much as others. We still have to watch out for them too. So,
Kurt, I have to imagine in your capacity with Link Saints and just in your leadership positions that you've seen either yourself or others fall into that trap of working so hard to chase after the one that you accidentally abandon the rest.
For sure. I mean, you can get hyper focused on, and it's not even individuals. Sometimes it's like I have this you know, summer barbecue idea came to me so clearly that I must, you know, over invest myself in this idea, you know. But
yeah,
that for sure.
All right, last big talk then. Elder Rasband.
Wait, I'm sharing the picture. Oh, yes. With on the screen. You see it?
Oh my!
Oh my!
Oh my! I'm dying over this picture.
Look at that.
Oh, look at how young what is he is.
He's like 12.
Right?
But he's still, man, he is.
The
he's
glasses.
He's rocking those Coke bottles, though. Strong even back then. Oh, that
that's
is,
fun.
That is everything I needed today. Kurt, thank you for sharing that with us.
That's all I got.
Any thoughts on the Elder Rasband Fortress?
It was good. Just another.
Have a fortress.
Prepare your family kind of a thing.
There was a lot of that. Is anyone afraid? Yeah. Do any of you feel that the second coming is closer now than you did on Friday?
Well, I think by definition, Jeff, it would be closer to us.
Okay, more than on Friday. 2 days closer.
Okay.
I don't feel like it's more than 2 days closer, but I do feel like, geez, I got to kind of get my act together a little bit more. Yeah. I need a little refocus and hunker down.
Yeah.
I got that too. That was kind of the gist, it seemed. And after all this hoopla, everyone expecting all of the many bajillion rumors to come about. No more word of wisdom, codifying the family proclamation, longer missions. I mean, we saw it all.
Well, they had our attention. Like,
true.
They had great, great attention.
I really hope they're not trying to take advantage of us in that way. Like, they're not sitting in a room saying, look, after these past two ones, they're all expecting something huge. We can just drag them along until the end and never deliver. It'll be like the series finale of Lost. It's going to be great.
Well, I want to say on that, they had our attention, except for when the speakers were up there talking and you looked at the display behind them, it looked like a vegetable tray. I kept getting distracted by saying, is that
got a
kale?
Lot of Twitter love.
I liked it, but it was all over the place. Like there were succulents and flowers and there were,
I saw people photoshopping ranch dressing into the background. I gotta find that one was
one
good.
Thing I missed though. The last main musical number, before present, Nelson. Why were there subtitles on that song? Did I miss the explanation?
I don't know. My husband and I had the same conversation. I thought they got rid of all the subtitles.
Is it a new verse? Is it a new song? What did I miss? It's not a new song.
It's a primary song. It's been around for a long time.
I know,
right?
Are we talking about "I Know My Savior Loves Me"?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a primary song that's been around forever.
So, at least like, a few. Why of nowhere else over the weekend did we have the subtitles? But that I must have missed it. If anyone knows, because I don't think they made an announcement about them. They just dropped. I wanted to see the bouncing ball going along as they're singing this. Kurt, do you know what we're talking about, or were you busy?
No, I actually just noticed the very last few lines that. That was up. I have no idea why that was the case.
I missed it. I have no idea. And then, of course, we're full circle now on President Nelson and Templeton. Repent. So, guys, we actually made it through all of conference pretty effectively. That was very impressive.
Yeah.
Well done to all. Well, we are wrapping up here. Kurt, I want to give you a chance. Tell everyone about the Questioning Saints we got going on. You might as well get some love for that.
You know, I never thought you'd ask. In fact, I may have a graphic that I can throw on the screen just by chance. And yes, so this is cool because there's so many references to how we can reach out and love those that maybe have stepped away from the church or are really wrestling with their faith. And we are going to, we have a summit ready to go that's happening a week from Tuesday. And where you can register now if you go to leadingsaints.org/questioning, and you can register. It's a free online conference that you watch day to day, and we've got everybody from Elder Hafen and his wife to Anthony Sweat to you know,
Jana Reese. Huh? Look at you.
Jana Reese is part of that, a few BYU professors, and we all talk about this question of how can we better validate and love those who are questioning their faith or have stepped away from the faith. And it's I'm excited to share these interviews because they're so – I just loved being a part of them. They're so good.
And look at you. That's quite the headshot you got going there, man.
Oh, yeah, man. That's
move
that
over, Brad Wilcox. It's
bigger every day,
Brad
Jeff.
Brad Wilcox has got nothing on you. That's everything. You're set, man. Cool. Ariane, Tiffany, anything you want to plug? Anything? Did you like start an MLM or anything? You want to work on your downstream?
Nope.
Not yet.
We are in Idaho, so you never know.
Yeah. Just had to make sure.
Melaleuca. Come on.
Well, no. We're actually Idaho's in Sensi country up here.
Oh, is that Boise area?
Yeah, that's the Boise area. The Sensi guy lives in her steak.
I don't know what that means.
Oh. Scentsy? The candles, Jeff. Don't tell your wife.
I live in D.C. We've got tons of liars all over the place. I don't need multi-level marketing to make that work for me. I'm doing okay.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you
that. Wonderful. Well, everyone who hung out on Twitter, on Facebook, you Facebook Live folks, thanks for that. It was interacting with those of you who had some comments. Much appreciated on that front. If you haven't subscribed to our Facebook page, please do that. And please also do for Leading Saints. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow the Twin Sisters Instagram account.
Yeah, we'll post more if we get some more followers.
Tiffany told me that she's going to start posting recipes for Lebanese food. So you heard it first, and I just want you to be ready.
Oh yeah, because I eat so much Lebanese food.
No time. That's no better time to start. I'm just trying to challenge you to be a better person. Don't be ungrateful.
That's not within my countries of food that I will eat.
Lebanese
food. Very specific countries that I will only eat their food.
Okay, go to Cracker Barrel. I don't care. Do whatever you want. Anyway, I very much appreciate the Twin Sisters, Tiffany and Ariane, coming to sit down and talk conference with us, as well as Kurt Rankin, my good pal. Always nice of you to stop in and chat about this stuff. Thank you, everybody. Hope you all had a great conference. Please go to thisweekinmormons.com. Let us know how we're doing. Subscribe via however you get your podcasts, and we will talk to you soon. As I often say to close things, be well, be holy, and be happy.